From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The U.S. Department of Justice has visited Wilmington on at least two occasions in response to violent incidents between members of law enforcement and the community. During those visits, DOJ officials evaluated local law enforcement practices and policies, and that scrutiny is occurring all across the United States. As it seems, new cell phone videos showing excessive use of force by police, with people of color usually on the receiving end, seem to pop up with astonishing frequency. There are initiatives to improve relationships between members of the community and law enforcement here. The University of North Carolina Wilmington is facilitating some under-the-radar conversations that we'll hear more about today. The City of Wilmington and New Hanover County have launched a new project. Officials are creating a joint committee intended to facilitate dialogue and proactively offer policy recommendations. While the formation of this group is underway, we're checking in with local law enforcement, local government officials, and the community itself. Bill Saffo is, of course, the mayor of the City of Wilmington and a longtime advocate for community dialogue on issues of race and diversity. After the shootings of police officers last month in Dallas, Mayor Saffo sent out an impassioned statement of support for both law enforcement and those members of the community who have been touched by violence. He joins us today. Mayor Bill Saffo, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Frankie Roberts is the executive director of the nonprofit Leading Into New Communities, or LINC. LINC helps African-American men between 16 and 24 who have been incarcerated transition into productive roles in the community. Frankie Roberts also continues to be a leading voice in the work to bridge the gap between local communities of color and law enforcement. Frankie Roberts, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
If you have questions for our guests about law enforcement practices here, if you've had an encounter with an officer or you are a member of the law enforcement community, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Mayor Bill Saffo, the U.S. Department of Justice came to Wilmington in response to at least two separate incidents, one involving a canine unit when a dog was released into a car after the suspect had been stopped, the other involving the fatal shooting of a suspect who days before had shot and injured an officer. What were the DOJ's findings, and what kinds of recommendations came out of those investigations?
DOJ wanted to review the policies and procedures of the Wilmington Police Department. They also wanted to have some extensive conversations with people within the community that had significant concerns. In fact, there was a meeting on Castle Street that I attended with Sheriff McMahon and Police Chief Evangelist, as well as Ben David, our DA, and our city manager. Of course, Frankie was also there, and it got a little spirited. But to have a discussion as to how the community felt about police actions and policies. And DOJ representative was there. We had a subsequent meeting at City Hall with several representatives from the community, NAACP members. And one of the commitments that we made from the City of Wilmington was that we wanted to reestablish what was the old Human Relations Commission into this new community commission that gives us an opportunity to have dialogue with the community, as well as reviewing all of our policies within the Wilmington Police Department, more transparency into our system. One of the commitments that we made was, in fact, before the body cameras were even talked about, was to outfit all of our police officers with body cams. I felt personally in 2003 when I was elected to the city council, we were in the process of outfitting all of our automobiles, all of the police cars with cameras. And I felt that that had cut down a lot on the mistrust and information that was being disseminated out there about people being stopped unlawfully. And if somebody is stopped, there is now evidence and why did that police officer stop you? So we can go right to the tape, sit down with the chief, sit down with the officer, and review it to determine, if what they were doing is right or wrong. So our commitment was to continue with the transparency, get more body cameras out there on all of our police officers. To date, I think we have 140 of them that have been fitted with the body cams.
And how many officers are we talking?
Over 300 officers that will eventually be fitted.
So about halfway there.
It's about $899 a camera. The camera is not so much the cost; it's all the information that is downloaded into that system is tremendous. And then, of course, there are some privacy issues that we have to contend with the state of North Carolina as to how that information is disseminated when a citizen or somebody in the community wants to see it. So we're going through that process. We're doing additional training with our officers, and we're having community conversations with the University of North Carolina at Wilmington, kind of being the spearhead of these community meetings. We contracted out with them to have 20 in all, so we've finished 10 so far.
And I want to hear from you, Frankie Roberts, about those conversations, because you are participating in those, and you actually kind of invented the model for that, didn't you?
Yes, myself and one of the captains of the police department.
You informally started this. Tell us about that. How did it get started?
Well, you know, working with young men, and our youth development program works with African-American males 16 to 24. And so as a part of working with the young men, one of the ongoing areas of concern and improvement is how we interact with law enforcement. So myself and Captain Williams had invited him by. He has brought a few officers by, and then we had this idea, let's do this every week.
And with different officers. Captain Donnie Williams grew up in Creekwood.
That's correct.
So he understands the dynamics in
exactly.
The inner city, and he has this unique view as both a member of law enforcement and a member of the community.
Yes. So him and I, and then our light coordinator, which is Juan Bethia, we started every other week with officers having a round table, keeping at the forefront. The objective was to sit down and get to know each other personally, whereas the uniform wasn't a factor as much, and whereas who I was in the community as a young man wasn't as much a factor, but that we can sit there and talk to each other about our aspirations, our goals, and our dreams, and it worked really well.
And now this is a formalized arrangement,
yes.
As Bill Sappho was just telling us about. So we're halfway through these structured community conversations. Press is not allowed to come to these. What are some of the surprising revelations that have come out of these, when members of law enforcement, members of the community come together without badges, without colors, without, you know, just people? What are they learning about one another? Mayor Sappho.
From the meetings I have attended and the things that I have listened to, there's a significant mistrust. And I think that when people, human beings, can sit down across from each other and understand who each other are and where they're coming from, it breaks down that mistrust. And from my perspective, that's what we have to constantly work at, because, you know, police officers are public servants. They are serving the public, who are the citizens. And the citizens have got to have trust in their police department. They're doing, I believe, an outstanding job. They field over 189,000 calls for service in this community. We get it right a lot of the time, but, you know, when something does go wrong, we've got to be able to address it and be able to have a conversation with the community and explain what happened. And if we are wrong and the police have done something wrong, we need to correct it and fix it and discipline the people that have violated that trust. So, you know, but on the other side of the equation, the community also has to understand where the officer's coming from when they're stopping somebody in the middle of the night, the dangerous situations they're putting themselves in front of every single day to protect us and to care for us. They also have a job to do, and how they do it is very important to all of us. So, you know, being able to bridge that gap and have that conversation is extremely, extremely important.
Where does that mistrust come from? Frankie Roberts, if I grow up in this community as a white kid or a person of color, am I going to have a different experience with law enforcement officers?
Absolutely.
And what will the difference be?
I think you can't teach what you don't know, and you can't lead where you don't go. It's all a matter of perspective. And I think, our history, and we do live in a community where there's a big gap between the haves and the have-nots, unfortunately. And I think we're positioning ourselves under good leadership to minimize that gap. But I think as a black youth is to be viewed as a businessman, as an entrepreneur, and the media sometimes portrays African-American males as a criminal, as a thug, and not as a businessman. So we have been socialized to think when we see a young white male between 16 and 24, we don't have that image of being a criminal or the image of being a thug. We have an image of a businessman. And so we are socializing now people. When I see a young black male in the same age group, is to be able to think a businessman, a working person, an entrepreneur. Those are little subtle paradigms that we have to change, and we have to be intentional about it. So that's why I made sure that even raising my son, who is my youngest son, who is now 21 years old, I put him in soccer from the time he was 3 years old until he became a soccer referee at 16. And he always asks, why do I have to play soccer with all these white people? And I said, because I need, in this community, you to understand middle-class culture.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about the relationship between members of law enforcement and the community, taking a closer look at how we're doing right here in this region. Frankie Roberts, we'll say goodbye to you until segment three. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to having you back. Mayor Bill Sappho is here, and after this short break, we'll hear from New Hanover County Sheriff Ed McMahon. We'll also take your calls and emails, 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking about the growing public awareness around the country of the tension between members of the community and those who police them. With us now to explore some of those issues and how we're doing right here is City of Wilmington Mayor Bill Sappho, and joining us now, New Hanover County Sheriff Ed McMahon. Sheriff McMahon, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
The phone lines are now open. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Sheriff McMahon, as a member of law enforcement, and you know your own force is under increasing scrutiny, as are forces all across the country, because of our growing awareness of issues around communities of color and how law enforcement has interacted with them. And of course, we're not demonizing all law enforcement officers, but there have been issues there. What have you learned just in the last couple of years about practices and maybe how some of those practices should be modified?
Well, it's interesting. And if you look at, there's ballpark a million officers in this country who have thousands of interactions with their communities every day. So if you look at it in light of that, it's a small number. And I think that they're made very big. But overall, if you look at an agency and what is that agency doing, it's about – the bottom line is about their relationships with the community. And earlier on, you were talking about trust.
Right.
And it has been amazing to me as I've really kind of dived deeper into this, the perceptions. My perception is going to be my reality and yours is going to be yours, and how sometimes we're both wrong on our perceptions. But I think if I look at here locally, if I look at us in New Hanover County, and you look at, first of all, what are we doing right? Well, we've recently become nationally accredited. Police department's been nationally accredited and gone through their first reevaluation and passed that. So we're holding ourselves to nationally accepted best practices. I think that's important for everybody to know. Do we make mistakes? Absolutely. Do we have poor judgment once in a while? Absolutely. And I think recently we did a public service announcement. I meet with all of the police chiefs every month in the county, and we talk about national issues, but we really talk about what's going on here in New Hanover County and how can we improve and what can we do better, what are we doing well, what can we do better. And we came up with a public service announcement, and it was listen, explain, comply, complain.
What does that mean?
We, as the sheriff and the police chiefs, we went to our officers and said, we want you to, when you stop someone, when you have an encounter with someone, listen to them and explain why you're out with them. That will put everybody at ease. You don't need no long conversations. Just listen to what they're saying and explain. The next part was to our citizens, comply, and then you can complain later. We all have internal affairs units. We all have processes that you can go through. The majority of the time, 99.9% of the time, the officer wants to have his reaction with you, and he wants to clear. So if it's going to be a ticket, whatever it's going to be, let's go ahead and get through the process. Because when those encounters go bad, they go really bad.
Right.
So we want the community to say, hey, listen, just officer, you listen and explain. Citizen, just comply. And then you can complain later. And we all have things set up, nationally best practices, where we have internal affairs. And if you look at the past, just with the sheriff's office, I've had deputies that when something goes wrong and it's not an internal policy, I call the state. I call the SBI.
You're talking about when an officer has violated protocol?
Yes. Well, if we get a complaint on an officer, we look at it first, our internal affairs. And we look to see, are there any policy violations, sheriff's office policy, protocol, procedures? And then we deal with that internally. If we start to look and we say, wait a minute, this could be criminal, we immediately contact our DA, Ben David, and then together we ask the State Bureau of Investigation to come in and investigate it, totally separate from us. And we've had deputies that have been arrested. So, you know, we've shown where we're not going to tolerate misbehavior. If it's a policy, we're going to deal with it quickly. Now, there are laws that we can't tell, personnel laws that kind of tie our hands a little bit. That's where the trust comes in. But just know that we do care. And I think the bottom line is it's about trust and building relationships in the community.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the tension between members of law enforcement and the people they're charged with policing. With us to answer your questions, Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo and New Hanover County Sheriff Ed McMahon. We'd love to hear from you if you're a member of law enforcement or if you've had an encounter with an officer and have a question or an observation. The phone number to call is 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Steve from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Things like internal affairs departments, SBI investigations, or even a citizens review board could be described as efforts to make things better, to improve existing situations. Community policing, it seems to me, is somewhat different. It's more of a transformative, a change, a transformation to a different way of being. I know that we talk a lot about community policing in this town. My question for both the mayor and the sheriff is, what are the challenges that you see for attitude change on both part of the community and police is at the heart of community policing?
In other words, what do we all need to learn?
Well, but what are the specific challenges that Wilmington and the Wilmington Police and the Sheriff's Department face in attitudinal shift towards the community at large, particularly on the part of patrol officers? Thank you.
All right.
You want to go first?
Sure. I think what we've been in the past, we trained our officers, our deputies. You go in, you just go right in, you take care of things, and you move on. Well, that's not the best case. So we've kind of stepped back, And the community is, we want our officers, our deputies, to be involved, like Frankie said earlier, just on a normal day-to-day basis. You're going through the neighborhood, you stop, you see some children, you see some teenagers. Hey, how are you doing? What's going on? Get to know them a little bit. So you're building a relationship.
And so you're getting to know the people who live in that particular community.
Get to know them. And then when there is a problem, we're telling the officers just – let's try to de-escalate things. Let's not just run in there and just hands-on. Let's stop. And we in the sheriff's office implemented some special de-escalation training to the deputies this year. And all the police chief, all of us have talked about this before any of this happened. And we want the officers, slow down a little bit. Don't rush into it. Let's talk about it a little bit. Maybe wait for your backup. You don't have to go hands-on right away.
You don't have to physically take over the situation.
Right. There may be a time when you do, but lots of times, let's de-escalate it. Let's first of all, and that's what's so good about a female officer. She automatically does that. But as we know, it's a white male dominated. That's just what law enforcement is. So we're all working to get more blacks and more females. And so I think we're learning from that. Let's not just rush in. Let's de-escalate a little bit. Let's talk about it. And let's try to reason and calm things down. But a lot of it is that trust that you have to have.
Steve, thank you so much for that phone call. Do you think, Sheriff McMahon and also Mayor Saffo, that the history of segregation here in this community has caused you to be more sensitive to this than perhaps? It just seems like this community might be a little more progressive along these lines, or might have responded earlier than some other communities that are just now starting to wake up and say, we have a problem.
I believe it has, and I believe that we were trying to get out in front of this thing. I know that when we hired Police and Chief Evangelist, one of the things that we hired him for was the community policing piece that we thought was critically important to this community. In regards to racial issues that we've had in Wilmington for many years, I think every community in the country's had those issues also. But I will say this, Rachel, as the mayor of the city, we are more diverse as a community than we've ever been in its history. And as long as I've lived here, I've seen the community grow, prosper, do very well. But we're also more segregated as a community than we've ever been also. And what I mean by that, from socioeconomic conditions, people that live maybe in Landfall and people that live on 8th Street don't look through the same prism. They have the same concerns. They want a safe neighborhood. They want their kids to grow up in a safe environment. They want them to be successful, but they look at each other sometimes differently. Sometimes that is a perception issue that is created because people don't hang around each other.
Why is there a larger chasm than there has been in the past?
I just think it's the whole country. We are segregating ourselves. I mean, I can go into any house today. I can look at the TV and I can tell you what they're watching. If they're watching CNN or if they're watching Fox, I can tell you how they're going to vote. I can tell you what they're thinking about different aspects of things. And when I listen to them, they're coming to it from their perception, from where they grew up, or what they were taught, or what they think. And I think it's important to have this dialogue and conversation because, as a mayor, I have the opportunity to go through all parts of this community and speak to all kinds of people. And we've got great people all over, and they want the same exact thing. It's one of the things that it's kind of – I scratch my head when I go home at night is – everybody wants the same thing. They want a great environment to live in. They want to be able to find a good paying job. They want a safe environment for their kids to grow up. Everybody wants the same thing. But I think we look at it from different points of view. And I think that when we have an opportunity as a community to sit down with each other, across the table from each other, or wherever that may be, it breaks down a lot of that stereotyping that has been embedded in some of us for years. Hey, look, I grew up here. I understand. I've heard things over the years, perceptions of different groups of people.
You come at this from a really interesting point of view because you were born and raised in Wilmington.
Yeah.
You were telling us off the air earlier you went to school during desegregation.
Yeah.
And you're a white man who lives and you've always had a fairly privileged life.
Correct.
So you could just turn your head. You could look the other way. Why does this matter to you?
Because I think it's so important as a community and as a country that we have to understand that we've got different groups of people that make up America with different values, different religions. And I think it's important that we talk to one another. You know, I was telling you earlier, I grew up at Riceville Beach. Went to Riceville Beach Elementary School in the 1960s, all white classes. Desegregation came in. They took us and they bused us down to William Upper on Fifth Street, Fifth Avenue, which was an interesting social experiment, to say the least. Within 2 weeks, and there was a lot of fussing and fighting going on because we didn't really know each other. Within 2 weeks, I calmed down, and I made some of the greatest friends. And I got shipped all over every school probably, I feel like, in the entire county. So I got to meet so many different people. We're all the same. And what I think is important is that when people can come together and talk to each other, it breaks down a lot of that stuff. So that's what I hope we're going to do with this new commission that we have. I want it to really be proactive, and I know it's a small part in this big microcosm of life, but I think it helps if we can have these discussions, because it's just not about race. It's about LGBT issues. It's about policing issues. It's about a lot of different things that we deal with in the community.
Have you ever had a frightening encounter yourself with law enforcement?
I have. And this was interesting. Several years ago, right about when I was elected in 2003, I was building a metal building, and a contractor that I was dealing with said, I built that same building at Dutch Square Industrial Park. So he said, go by and take a look at this building. So it was late one evening. I went by and took a look at it. I was driving around the back of it to take a look at the structure of the building and whatnot. And as I was turning the corner and was coming away, all of a sudden a black Camaro comes at me at a very high rate of speed and has no markings on it. Guy jumps out of the car. He's got jeans. He's got a black sweatshirt on. And he pulls a gun and he points it right at me. He says, put your hands on the steering wheel. I thought, for the love of God, I'm being robbed here. So I was shocked, and I put my hands on the steering wheel, and you can imagine my heart rate was going through the ceiling. And it was a sheriff's deputy, undercover sheriff's deputy.
Had Sheriff McMahon heard this story?
Sheriff has ever heard this, but it was interesting.
Before me.
But it was before Sheriff McMahon was the sheriff. Right. But there was a rash of break-ins at Dutch Square, and the sheriff's department was doing the right thing. They were making certain they were patrolling the area to make sure that nobody was going to do any more break-ins. And he put the gun on me, and I froze. I did exactly what he said. And, I always said to myself later, if I would have moved to the right to try to get my driver's license, would he have thought that I was going for a gun and shot me? So I got that perspective firsthand, and it frightened me. But he had a job to do. I did exactly what he said. There was no problem. He came to the car window. He says, who are you? I showed him my license, and everything was cool. And I called the sheriff at the time later and explained to him how much it scared me. But, there's a perfect example where, maybe a movement on my behalf the wrong way would have been a tragedy. Mm-hmm. So, I can understand in milliseconds how these decisions are made by officers in the street that don't know what's going on the other side, that may think that their lives are being are endangered. So,
you're listening to Coastline. We're talking about tension between members of law enforcement and members of the community. With us right now to answer your questions, Sheriff Ed McMahon and Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo. If you have a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have Laird from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Hey.
I just want to share an experience I've had twice with the sheriff's department, and I live in a county. It was like a neighborhood domestic dispute. Could have went either way, could have escalated. It was two different sets of sheriffs that came both times. I was amazed at how calm, professional, helpful. Actually, one of the sheriffs actually came back to my house. That was my 10-year-old son. Talked to him, calmed him down. I mean, I was literally in years the second time, how nice and respectful and calm they were. I just want to share that.
Thank you so much for your call, Laird. Sheriff McMahon.
Love to hear that kind of story. Yeah. I like to hear that rather than the mayor's story.
Well, I was fine with it after the fact.
But that is such an interesting illustration because in your story, Mayor Sappho, just one false move and it could have been an entirely different kind of story.
But I also listened to what the officer at the time told me. I mean, he obviously identified himself very quickly afterwards. But there again, when an officer is approaching you and is telling you something, do exactly what he tells you to do. And I think that's the moral from my perspective is I didn't want to make a wrong move that he thought that I was going for something that could have obviously turned out to be tragic.
We have a question from Melissa. She says, while I believe that outfitting police force members with body cams can be helpful, I don't believe it's a complete solution to the violence and racism people of color are experiencing with law enforcement. In some circumstances, body cams might be able to provide a clearer picture of these kinds of incidents. However, they also add to our already growing surveillance culture. How can we ensure that these body cams aren't used to wrongly surveil poor neighborhoods and neighborhoods largely populated by people of color? Sheriff McMahon.
That is a great question and one that we have been discussing ourselves as we roll out into all the body cameras. So I think that our legislators have put out, a law on what we need to follow. The good thing about that law is that we're all on the same page now. And if you are a part of or on the video, then you can come and request to see it and look at it. And so we're getting going through that now. And October 1st, we really can't release those videos unless you have a court order to do it. So it's very private right now. There are no copies that go around. It's all downloaded into a main data frame source. And, eventually it goes off of the officer's camera. So I think it's something that we're going to have to work together on and just be respectful. I had a call since we started. I'm saying, hey, look, the house wasn't as clean as I thought it should be, or my family was in there. I'd rather not have them. What's worried about that? So a great question, and I think we're going to be very careful, and I think the new laws actually help with that.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a discussion about the evolving relationship between members of law enforcement and the members of the community they police. Mayor Bill Sappho, thank you so much for joining us today. After this 90-second break, we'll return for the final segment. Your last chance to ask a question. Our email address is coastline@whqr.org. The phone number, 910-343-1138. When we come back, we'll talk to Sterling. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're talking about why there's so much tension between law enforcement, members of the community, both nationwide and locally, and what local leaders are doing to bridge those gaps. We have New Hanover County Sheriff Ed McMahon with us today, and rejoining us now for the final segment is Frankie Roberts. He's the executive director of the nonprofit Leading Into New Communities, or LINC. LINC works with young African-American males who've been incarcerated and helps them turn their energies into being contributing members of the community. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a few minutes left to ask your question today. The number to call is 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have Sterling from Leland. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing? This is a good show.
Thank you.
I think we need to be honest about what's happening in this country. And we always say, it's so often said, that it's a small minority of policemen, and it's played down. The fact is, there is a black person being killed in this country almost every day, statistically, almost every day. No one can say this is a small problem or a few people. It's a big problem. And I think a lot of the black folks feel this is somewhat hypocritical what's happening now. This has been going on in America for centuries, for a long time. And all of a sudden, a few policemen get shot. And I don't mean to sound negative about it, but now it's a big problem. Now people are realizing it's a problem. It's always been a problem. And that's why people feel in a lot of this what's going on is hypocritical, because people have known about this. Police departments have known about this problem for decades upon decades upon decades, and it's never been dealt with because it's been hidden. And the cameras all of a sudden reveal the truth that's been going on in America for awful, awful long time. This would have never even happened if some black people didn't take pictures of the murders of black men and women all over this country.
And, you know, Sterling, I think you raise an interesting point about when this started to take over our national dialogue, because, of course, we had Ferguson, Missouri, and there was outrage over the grand jury decision in that case with a white officer shooting a black man in Ferguson. And since then, we've seen cell phone video. And of course, there was the Facebook post recently when a woman allegedly live streamed the murder of her partner by an officer. Well, hold on.
I hear you saying.
Hold on.
Let me just say this.
Sure.
Because I don't want much time. Another thing is that these police departments all over this country have had these videos hidden for years. And now, finally, you know, they're creeping, they're saying, oh, we're going to be honest now. See, people don't really believe what they're saying now.
So, Sterling, you're
going on for so long.
Right. And your point is, now that we have cell phone video evidence, we have to admit that this is going on. I have to say, I've heard my whole life the term DWB, driving while black, growing up as a white person. I never, and Sheriff McMahon, I can see you shaking your head, and I'm going to get you to respond in a second. But growing up as a white person, I didn't know if that was actually a thing, if my life would have been different, my experience with law enforcement would have been different had I been born African American in this country. But now we are, Sterling makes a point, we are seeing more and more evidence, and it's troubling across this country how often evidence, cell phone videos pop up of a white officer treating a person of color in a way that is different than white people might have been treated in that circumstance. How do you respond to Sterling, Sheriff McMahon?
Well, I don't agree with Sterling. I said earlier there's nearly a million officers and thousands of interactions every day in our communities, and there's a handful of officers that have done bad. To say that we have video, we have information that this has been going on is not true. So he may believe it, but it's not true, period.
Frankie Roberts, do you have a response to Sterling? I mean, does what he said resonate with you?
As I said earlier, what you see is based on where you sit. I mean, that's the pilot in a plane looks at where he's headed differently than the passengers. That's why it's a door there. So I would say one of the responses to a lot of the challenges with black male youth, again, which spun us into doing this, is I would agree that there are very few officers. There are a few officers who are jerks, all right, that kind of has created this paradigm, and most officers get a bad rap because they are a member of the collective, period. But the other side of the conversation that studies would also show, it's only a very few young black males who are jerks. But it's treated as though that there's a big gulf of black males. And I think it needs to be reciprocity, that if I have to acknowledge that it's one or two black officers, I'm going to say one or two officers, I have to also acknowledge it's one or two youth that are jerks. And I don't think that side of the conversation is revealed equally. So when I talk to my 21-year-old, if I don't tell him that he might not be able to identify the jerk, maybe because of the color of his skin, then I'm putting him in a vulnerable position. And I can only speak to my son based on my experience. And I have had more challenging experience, and I've had good experiences, but literally it was because of relationship. If I have an officer that has never interacted with a person of color from true love and embrace, then it might be a little frightening because we don't have a a person hadn't had that relationship and vice versa. Right now, my son has had different experiences now with law enforcement. Take pictures with Sheriff McMahon, the mayor, and came to his grandmother's funeral. In his mind, they on my side.
Sheriff McMahon, Frankie Roberts is saying there's a reciprocity that needs to happen, and
yes.
I think we're seeing officials in this community try to address that by forming
yes.
this joint committee,
sure.
the Community Advisory
mm-hmm.
Board, of which you will be a member as well. And this is a joint
yes.
committee effort between the county and the city.
Yes.
And, you know, Mayor Sappho was also talking about body cams. But are there other things that white officers just need to learn about how to interact with?
Absolutely. And I really appreciate Frankie because he's going to tell you the truth and he's going to speak it. And I agree with what Frankie just said. I really do. I was speaking with my wife this morning because I wasn't really sure what we were going to do. And I've been here for 25 years, but I'm 55 years old. So I spent half my life up north in a small community where this was never discussed.
Mm-hmm. And
never.
Probably didn't have the same
didn't,
kind of history
nothing.
That this area has.
Nothing at all. Now, my wife was third-generation Wilmingtonian, so she understands. And I said, it's amazing to me, and I love these conversations that I've had with Frankie and Atiba and different members in the black community where I'm doing something I think is so great, and they'll be like, not really. It's perceived totally different. So, yes, there is always room to get better, and I think the dialogue that we have is so helpful, and we need to relay that to our officers that are on the street that, hey, we think differently, and we need to understand that.
We have an email from Anna who writes, while I applaud the creation of the Community Relations Advisory Committee, this is that joint effort between the city and the county, and understand the value of community dialogue, I think we need to go further. There are county residents who have been advocating for a citizens review board that would provide some outside accountability for police actions. I would like to hear Sheriff McMahon's opinion on the formation of a citizens review board. How would that be different from this current committee effort that's underway, Sheriff McMahon? And what is she talking about, and how do you feel about that?
Okay. The community relations board that we're having now, I envision this as being made up of people like Frankie that are respected by all of us and are respected within their communities, and people trust. So if something's going on, they may not, because of the misunderstandings and the lack of trust, they may not want to trust in my internal affairs setup. They go to Frankie. Frankie makes sure that we get the information and that something's done. Now, there's a lot of things we can't share, but Frankie and I have a relationship. And we may not always agree, but he's going to hold me accountable. I'm going to hold him accountable. So I'm totally in favor of that.
And I have to say, Frankie Roberts is nodding vigorously as you talk. He agrees
with
you.
We've had some tough conversations,
yeah.
And it hurts. But you know what? Truth is truth. So I appreciate that about Frankie. He's going to speak it, and we're going to figure it out. Now, if you get a citizens review board, I am opposed to that. Every 4 years, I have the ultimate evaluation by this community. I'm elected. And I cannot, as the head of the law enforcement agency, have some citizens telling me how to run the sheriff's office. We have an internal affairs that's in place. And if one of our policies is violated, then we act swiftly and we act severely, and we take care of that. If it's of a criminal nature, we get with Ben David and we call in the SBI. So I'm opposed to a citizen review board telling me or telling police chiefs how to run a police agency. They're not in law enforcement. They have a perspective. And my opinion would be I'm the pilot, and they're going to be in the plane. They're not going to have the same perspective as I do. I hold myself accountable. I come to things like this. I'm in the community. Frankie and I, we have painful conversations, but I would be opposed to a citizen review board, but I am 110% in favor of this community relations board.
Robert writes, when my father was the sheriff in Wake County, he always made a point that all his deputies were living in the county, but in all areas and neighborhoods. They were encouraged to get to know their neighbors and communities, so he always had knowledgeable community officers that knew the folks by their family name and the names of their family members. That helped more than anything else. Don't you think the same would help here?
Wow. I would love to be in a nice county where we could do that. We have 220-some residents here. A lot of the deputies cannot afford to live in New Hanover County, and they live in some of the more rural counties. But what we do with that is we try to assign the deputies to areas, and they stay in those areas, and they get to know the community, and they get to know the people that live there. So they don't all live in our county, no.
You're listening to Coastline, talking about the relationship between law enforcement and members of the community. John from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, Rachel. Great conversations you're having here.
Good.
I, like the mayor, grew up here, went to school here, came up during the riots in Wilmington. It's a pretty tough time.
You're talking about the 1970s?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
And even though that was going on, I still played football with a lot of the guys from Seabreeze on weekends, from Gervais. They'd come to the beach where I was raised. And we had no problems, but it was always when we got to the schools, and it seemed like back then even there were some agitators that caused problems. Current day, I look at some of this as a media problem also.
And
I'd like to get your perspective and the officers' perspectives on that, because so many things we had – the case in Missouri, where it was hands up, don't shoot, and that played out for months and months until this day is still being played out by the media. Hands up, don't shoot. Our own Justice Department, that was run by minority people in charge, proved that was not the case. So how does the media play in this? How does the sheriff and others and feel about that? I mean, it seems to me that we're to accept untruths by the media.
And, you know, you raise a good point, John. I just want to say, when it came to Ferguson, which is the circumstance you're talking about, that was breaking news, and different media companies handle breaking news in different ways. I have to say NPR is pretty good about not reporting something until it's been confirmed, but that was a bit of misinformation that went around. It was some myth that got picked up pretty quickly. But Frankie Roberts, what's your take on that? How do you think the media is doing in general when it comes to these incidents? Is the media handling it responsibly? Are they shedding light, or are they fanning the flames in an unproductive way?
I would say both and. I mean, that's complicated. Again, I think that we, print media, as well as all the other media outlets, you develop a thinking in a person's mind. I mean, and I think that what the media has done, and it just happens, whether you report the media, report the events accurately or not, that again, if I parallel 16 to 24-year-old white males with 16 to 24-year-old black males, based on how we have been socialized, we look at the two groups differently. One is hopeless and one is hopeful. And I don't know, and certainly the media fans that flame, I'm sure barbershops fan that flame, I'm sure country clubs fan that flame. And I think if you fan that flame, it's just an outcome and a reality. However, I think that it's our leadership's responsibility to hold all communities responsible and accountable, to reframe the conversation and lean into our discomfort.
Well said. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank Frankie Roberts, Sheriff Ed McMahon, and Mayor Bill Sappho for joining us today. Coastline airs Wednesdays only through the month of August. In September, we'll fire up the Thursday Coastline once again in time for political coverage. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline.